So on our theme this morning about how it all ends, you can see why Ryan North's Choose Your Own Adventure version of Shakespeare's Hamlet, To Be or Not to Be, is so popular online. You get to make your own story. You don't have to stick to Shakespeare's text. But what about a classical Shakespeare scholar? What would somebody like that make of taking the bard's work and molding it to your own sensibilities? Well, what if the classical lines and storylines from Shakespeare's greatest works were reworded or eliminated altogether? Would Shakespeare still be Shakespeare without the tragic endings like this one from Romeo and Juliet?
What's here? A vial closed in my true love's hand. Poison I see hath been his timeless end. Oh, churl, drunk all and left no friendly drop to help me after. I will kiss thy lips.
Can Hamlet be Hamlet without this confrontation between the prince and his mother Gertrude?
Have you forgot me?
No, by the rood, not so. You are the queen, your husband's brother's wife, and would it were not so, you are my mother.
Not all death and tragedy. What about the poetry of Midsummer Night's Dream?
The course of true love never did run smooth, but either it was different in blood.
Oh, cross, too high to be enthralled to low.
Or else misgrafted in respect of years.
Oh, spite, too old to be engaged to young.
Or else it stood upon the choice of friends.
Oh, hell, to choose love by another's eyes.
Or, if there were a sympathy in choice, war, death, or sickness did lay siege to it.
Now, we cannot lay siege to poetry like that without mangling it, or can we? Anya Saffer is the theater director and instructor at the Atlantic Acting School, and she's thought a lot about Shakespeare and tragic endings he wrote into his plays. Anya, hello.
Hello.
So what do you make of taking Hamlet and taking some of those scenes that we just heard and making them your own, choosing your own adventure, readapting them? Can it be done and still leave it Shakespeare?
Well, I don't know that it's Shakespeare, but I think it's certainly a wonderful thing, and I think that there's a really tried and true 20th century tradition at this point of artists taking Hamlet and using it for their own means. I think of – my very favorite one is Horatio, the epic poem by Chaim Plutzik. I also think of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead by Tom Stoppard.
Oh, do you? Let us listen to that. Listen.
Fancy a game?
We're spectators.
Do you want to play questions?
How do you play that?
You have to ask questions.
Statement one, love.
Cheating.
How?
I hadn't started yet.
Statement two, love.
I'm not going to play if you're going to be like that.
Listening there to dialogue between Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, two characters in Hamlet, that scene, of course, not in Hamlet.
And I think that this is a wonderful, wonderful tradition, and there are great pieces of art that come out of it. Hamlet is so iconic to us. He's such a part of our collective unconscious that in a way we go into any story about Hamlet with a certain amount of information, some of us more than others, but all of us at least with an image of a man holding a skull at a grave. But on the other hand, I also feel that if you're going to do Hamlet, if you're going to do Shakespeare, meaning if you're going to do the text, if you're going to do the poem, there is, I think, an unmissable opportunity to make the text clear. One of my favorite quotes about working on Shakespeare is from Peter Brook, the great English theater director, who says that a line of Shakespearean verse is like an atom, and if you can manage to split it open, it will release infinite energy. So the question for me when I'm working on Shakespeare is always, how do you split open the atom of the verse line? And I think that once you're dealing with the actual poem, the actual text, I think that that's an opportunity that one must bring all their faculties to bear on.
And do you find that modifications, adaptations of Shakespeare, maybe like the one we just heard, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is not even an adaptation but a completely different story within the play, do these make the bard's work more accessible to more people, or do they just play to those of us who are already fans?
Well, it's funny because my mother, when she was a graduate student at New York University, was invited to the opening night of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead on Broadway, because they were concerned that nobody would get the jokes. So they were eager to pack it with grad students.
To make sure there were laughs coming from it.
Mm-hmm. So I think that it probably plays more to fans.
It plays to fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have sat down to watch that movie with friends who aren't necessarily fans, and I got blank stares. And right. I've watched it 20 times. I love it.
Right.
It's just my thing.
Right. Well, this poem that I mentioned before, Horatio, this epic poem, is about Horatio's anguished life after Hamlet dies and his struggle to fulfill Hamlet's charge to him to tell his story, and how no one will listen, no one will hear it. And really, what was the story? It could be interpreted in so many different ways. Horatio himself is confused by it. And I think that for somebody like you, like me, who has such a deep love of Hamlet, there's something so profoundly satisfying about exploring these sort of different facets and different directions that the play suggests.
So in this – I want to ask you before we go, in this time of really contentious and fractious politics, that's the other thing I do, shouldn't more people have a way to read Julius Caesar, which teaches you, if you were to read that play, that, hey, it can get a lot worse mm-hmm. than politics is right now. It can get a lot mm-hmm. worse.
Yeah, I think there's always a battle to bring in audience members for a kind of really soul-searching, meaningful experience like that. As someone who's directed Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet, other tragedies, you know, you just are battling to get the audiences in, because I think that plays that really force you to examine your existence, or in the case of Julius Caesar, our sort of existence as a community and how we deal with leadership and our own worst impulses is terrifying. I think tragedy is absolutely terrifying, but also so culturally necessary. I think it serves a crucial cultural function.
Well, you might think that adaptations of Shakespeare are good. You might think that they're bad. But Ani, you know what I think? That nothing is neither good nor bad.
But thinking makes it so.
Anya Soffer is the theater director and instructor at the Atlantic Acting School. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, we all know how it ends for Hamlet, but we want to know what you would do. What's the one thing you would do if the world were ending?
Hi, my name's Annalisa, and I'm calling from Arizona. What I would like to do if tomorrow's the end of the world is I'd love to rip that toupee off of Donald Trump's head.
Oh, come on. Now, for lots of you, you say you spend your last day with the people you love the most.
Hi, my name is Lynn. Before the end of the world, I want to lay down with my love. He's 78, and he's still wonderful. Hi, my name is Lynn.
Hi, I'm Paul from Greensboro. I think I'd go for a walk in the woods with my wife and we'd hold hands.
Ben Marks does what we all should. He says, I would fly to go see my mother. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Tell us what you would do if today were your very last day. That number again, 877-8-MY-TAKE.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.